This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inside Pitch. We are excited today. I'm your host, Peter Caliendo. First of all, today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. You can get free audiobooks download at a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/insidepitch. You know, there's over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MPS player. Today's topic, mental toughness secrets that can take baseball players and coaches to the next level. You know, we'd like to get started right away. Let me tell you about our host first, and then we'll go into the show right away. Our guest today, Dr. Tom Hansen, one of the top sports psychologists in the world. He has his PhD on sports psychology from the University of Virginia. He was also the hitting coach there, and he was a collegiate baseball coach for 7 years. Dr. Hansen has worked with the New York Yankees, Major League teams, the Texas Rangers. He's written the book Heads Up Baseball and just came out with his new book, Play Big. Dr. Hansen's mentor is Ken Revizza, also an internationally recognized sports psychologist. Dr. Hansen and I just returned from the International Sports Group and BC Baseball's annual baseball convention in Vancouver. We were there and there were over 250 coaches in attendance. Dr. Hansen spoke several times to all the coaches that weekend. You know, I like a lot about Dr. Hansen is this. He's extremely knowledgeable when it comes to the mind game. He's well known all over the world. And on top of it, he also coached baseball at the collegiate level. And I think that's a rare combination. So I'm excited about having Dr. Hansen on the show. So let's start right away. I want to say hello, Dr. Hansen. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Pete. Thank you. Thanks for that introduction. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Well, I'll tell you what. I had a great time in Vancouver, especially because I got a chance to, you know, we've met several times at different conventions, but this time I got a chance to sit down with you, talk to you, get to know you. You got to know me a little bit. You know, it was a great start. I really enjoyed it. Tell us a little bit about what you thought about the convention.
I was really impressed, particularly with the quality of the people. The coaches were there. Yes, they wanted to learn about the mechanics. And yes, they wanted to know different strategies and so on, and what foot you should touch the base with, that kind of thing. But it was so clear that they were leading with their hearts, that they really had the players' interest first, and they were looking after each other. They weren't competitive with each other. They were competitive, but not with each other, and very good-natured. And I really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, to kind of just be in that space. And so I
noticed that when you were talking to them, I know you had several topics that, boy, they were very attentive, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure you're going to get into this. Sometimes, you know, we all tend to wander a little bit once in a while when listening to speakers, but with you, yeah, they were very, very attentive.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was really fun because they were really locked in. Everywhere I looked, or every person I looked at, they were locked in and drinking it all in. So that makes it a lot of fun. It was a great atmosphere.
All right, let's do this. Let's get started. The first thing I just wanted to ask you, as I thought about questions, you know, you have that uniqueness of one, having the experience of, you know, studying the mental game. You know, you're a professional at it, obviously an educator, but you've also coached college baseball, coached baseball. I think it's unique, but how important is that? Or how much does that help you even more when you're talking to coaches?
I think it's a huge help because I'm always looking for things that actually can help someone on the field. And while everyone else would want that too, that would be in my field, having not maybe been there can make a big difference. I think one of the greatest compliments that Ken Revizza and I get, and one of the most common that we got on the Heads Up Baseball 1.0, which wasn't called 1.0, of course, but given that there's about to be a 2.0, which we can talk about a little bit later, the greatest compliment was that people said, oh, this isn't a mental game book. It's a baseball book. This stuff can be used immediately. It was very practical. And here's what to do here. And think about this when you're here, rather than having them be two separate things. And it aligns with my philosophy that we're baseball is played by human beings. And by that, I mean, they aren't played by a brain and by a body separately. They're one thing. The whole Descartes deal that he cut, I think, has cost us a lot here in the West, capital W West, in that we've split apart the mental from the physical. And it's like, oh, let's have a mental game meeting. And then, oh, now we don't have time for a mental game. We got to take batting practice. And that's like, to me, that gets at the heart of what the biggest issue is with coaching, is that we don't really realize what we're dealing with, that we're dealing with a human being and not a machine.
And, you know, as a baseball coach, obviously I have fallen under that for sure, that we tend to focus so much on the fundamentals. And, you know, it's such a mind game. We all say that, you know, you have to have strong mind or to be able to play the game of baseball because there's so much failure. Yet as baseball coaches, we probably don't work on it as much as we should. That's why I think this this show particularly is going to be very important to our coaches that are listening all over the world. Let me back up just one second and ask you this. When you first started doing this, whether it's, you know, as a sports psychologist or you know, dealing with teams, when you started approaching major league teams or other colleges, at first there was a little hesitation, wasn't there?
Absolutely. And there still is quite a bit of resistance to the mental game, although that's shifted a lot in the last 15 years or so. Now, a majority of major league teams have someone that they would consider a performance enhancement guy, because there is a big distinction, of course, between, say, a drug guy or a psychologist who might help with marital issues or depression or something that might be wrong, and someone who is enhancing performance. That was when I was in undergraduate school at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. I found out about the field of sports psychology, and I quickly found I had a choice to make between going into psychology, and that would be more focused on working with people who have issues, and through physical education, which is about how do you be great. And I went through physical education because the focus was on how to be great. And yet, what I've found, it's, as I said, it's evolving quite a bit, so it's nowhere near what it was. But I would talk to, say, an agent and say, well, I focus primarily on the mental aspect of baseball. And they say, oh, that's so important. But fortunately, I've never had any of my guys needed to ever have that kind of help.
Yeah.
It's like saying...
They never failed, I guess, huh?
Right. Well, it's like saying, oh, I'm a strength and conditioning coach. Oh, that's really important. But fortunately, none of my guys have never needed that.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, it's so that's what I mean by just not quite understanding. That's one of my missions, is to help people better grasp what all is going on, to see more of the territory of what's actually happening and what's involved. Because I like to make big picture things. That's part of the thing also with what I bring to the table that I think can be most helpful, is to make these make connections on a big broad picture level. I can barely help it. My background is in liberal arts, so to me I feel like everything is related. But this whole deal about, in the West, we champion physical things and things that we can see, whereas in the East, it's more experiential, like in the Eastern cultures. Mm-hmm. And so we, in the West, champion mechanics. We see a guy pop up and we say, well, he dipped, or his hip flew open. And that's true. That is absolutely true. That is what happened. But for me, it's why. And what was going on that caused that? When he didn't used to do that before, what is going on for the guy's mind? Because if I go in and I just say, no, that your hip flew open too early. You got to keep that closed or keep that front shoulder closed. Well, that says it, you have, that's the art of coaching, in that you have to really realize you're dealing with a whole human being. You aren't dealing with a hip. You aren't saying that, that you can just change that hip and everything will be fine. That might be to the, from a physics standpoint, but it's more from a Newtonian physics, where, as opposed to a quantum physics, where a Newtonian physics is that you can break these things apart and then fix it and then put it back in. Whereas the quantum is more, everything is related and connected. Because if I go in on that on a player and I say, no, your hip, doggone it, we've talked about that, keep that hip. Well, he might keep his hip closed, but he might have just lost all his mojo. He might have just lost all of his confidence, and he's all stiffo. I was rebooting my computer here to get this get our microphones to work. I watched a video of a friend of mine. A friend of mine sent me of his son, and because we had watched him play the other night, and to me the guy looked pretty stiff the other night. And from here, before the first pitch came in, I could say, there, that's it right there. And what all he did was, he was waving his bat around in a circle in sort of a cocky way. He looked cocky in the box, where the couple nights before he had looked stiffo, like someone had said, keep your hip in. Like that was the whole mission. You see what I'm getting at there, where it's like, sure, you're dealing with a whole person, not a hip. And should you let the hip go? No, but there, you have to be very artful and aware of what you're doing in order to make that change effectively.
Now, is there a difference between, or what is the difference between being cocky and being confident, and how do coaches deal with that when they see or recognize that?
Well, I would call myself a pragmatist, which means what works. Do what works. Mm-hmm. So if a guy is cocky and he's doing great, be cocky right on. Yeah. And if he's being cocky and it's not working, then we need to make an adjustment. So it's a very person by situation model as far as that goes. I mean, if a guy's holding the bat cross-handed and hitting bombs, batting 410, are you going to say, no, don't do that?
Yeah.
reminds me of when my wife and I first started with the Yankees back in 2001. The first day, Derek Jeter comes and starts taking batting practice. There's more to the story, but the point of it I wanted to make was that he held his hands way high and waved them around and then whacked it from there. And my wife, who's German, didn't know baseball. She knew who Derek Jeter was, but that's about it. And she said, well, why would he do that? Why does he hold his hands up like that? It'd be much more efficient to hold them down here. And I mean, she's, as a German, very about efficiency. I'm like, German engineering would say, don't hold your hands up there. But she's also very astute to my response, which was that would take away his mojo. That's how he, his vibe. That's how he connects with the game. It's about a connection. It's about hitting as much more about timing and rhythm and flow than it is mechanics. But that's hard stuff to talk about for us Westerners, and especially men. Men like to talk mechanics, and your hands did this and your hands did that. But to me, that's missing the point, that it isn't that it's not that, but it isn't that it's not all that either. So if you take that away from Derek Jeter, he's going to be the stiffo guy. And it's like, okay, good job with your hands. I know you popped up or you froze and didn't swing at a pitch right down the middle, but your hands were in a good spot. So that's what I mean by being a pragmatist, where, okay, well, what actually works? You look in the big leagues, what are the best hitting mechanics to have? Well, it gets to be hard to tell, right? I mean, you can analyze and say, okay, they all have these five things. what they mostly have is they really believe in their mechanics. They really believe in their approach. So anyway.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because as I listen to hitting coaches around the world talk, more and more you're starting to hear, you know, in that stance, let them be the way they are, because, you know, let them be relaxed. You know, if they got their hands up, they got open stance, you got this stance. I mean, so it makes sense that when you go up to hit, you want to be just relaxed and comfortable. And as we know in hitting, nothing really happens till, you know, you make contact. Where are you at contact? So prior to that, why not be relaxed and have your hands up, like, you know, like Jeter, maybe you like your hands down.
Yeah, with my son, I have a 12-year-old son who plays, and I want him to be an athlete and also a very self-aware human being. I mean, there's no other better word for it. It's like a human being, which means he's paying attention. He's got a body, he's got a brain, and they're all, his brain is in his body, so is all one thing. And so the degree to which he can make it all one thing, and in fact then connect with his environment, meaning, and connect with the ball, not just with the bat physically, but be in effect really energetically connected with the ball with a sense of freedom and joy. That's what I'm after. And now, part of that is, of course, going to be, I mean, he could load more effectively. I know if he angled his knee in the way, what's his name from the Nationals?
Harper.
The way he coils, I mean, my son could do better with that. But when do I tell him that? And what I want for him is to become self-aware and self-confident, take responsibility for his own performance. As I gradually expose him to more and more things, I want him to play with different things. One coach said, hey, don't load. And I'm like, well, try it. I mean, there are some guys in the big leagues who it's almost don't load. And who are we to say that that won't be the best for you? I kind of doubt it, but it won't hurt to play with it so that you gain some awareness and some athleticism so that you can feel what's best for you and make those determinations for yourself. So as a coach, I'm more of a guide than a dictator.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Cromer from Youth Baseball Talk. On this week's show, we were fortunate enough to sit down and talk to sports marketing legend Jim Darby from Easton Sports. Had a great conversation with Jim, and at the end of the conversation, you're going to find out why we all know the name Easton. You're also going to learn a little bit about some of the upcoming bat changes that are going to happen for our kids. To hear more from this marketing legend for one of the biggest and largest companies in the world when it comes to the game of youth baseball, just go to youthbaseballtalk.com and click on this week's episode. We'll see you on the field.
Now, do you find, you know, is it, and I'm not sure if it's a loaded question here, do you find like you're better at, I mean, you're better athletes, does that relate to a better mind or stronger mind?
Not necessarily, no. I would say that, I mean, it depends on what you mean by athlete. A better performer.
Performer, yes.
Yes. If he's producing better, he tends to have a better sports mind. But now you got to keep in mind, well, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about, you know, being able to figure out different probabilities and do calculus? Or are we talking about what's your baseball mind? I interviewed Pete Rose. And I said, hey, I want to talk to you about the mental aspect of hitting. What do you talk to me about? He goes, well, you are talking to the wrong guy. Why? Because it's like, see the ball, hit the ball. That's it. Mm-hmm. And we did go for an hour and a half. I was able to draw him out more than that. However, what was clear to me was that he was a hitting genius. I mean, he got the most hits of anyone. You think of all the kids, not just who's people who've ever played Major League Baseball, but whoever wanted to play Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. and he's got the most hits.
And from both sides.
What? Yeah, exactly. So what? I mean, that guy's got to be a genius. So yes. Whatever he is, there is a geniusness. And there's a hitting geniusness in that he was able to keep it simple and able to keep, I love the battle. He said, I love the battle. Look for a fastball and drive it up the middle. And that was it. He wasn't burdened. You could say this was part of his genius. He wasn't burdened by a lot of other thoughts. He had the things that he was into, and we can name some things on and off the field, but not very many. And so he was able to keep it simple. So what I noticed with, say, also Stan Musial was, I said, hey, what were you doing at the plate? I mean, he's number two in total bases all time. What were you doing? He said, well, I always knew where the fat part of the bat was, and I want to put it on the ball. And so PhD boy, me, wanted more than that, but he turns out he said that four different times in this interview, and it was only later listening to it and transcribing it that I realized that that's what he was doing. And so it's the genius. It's smart to keep it simple. Keep, you know, the kiss, keep it simple, stupid. I think it's keep it simple, smart, or keep it inside a simple system. And so he was able to stay focused on that simple thing and not run wild with all kinds of thoughts and let all kinds of emotions be added to the task. Talking to Joe Madden, who's writing the foreword to Heads Up Baseball 2, is one of my favorite things that he said as I spoke to him is that the better players don't add things to the game. They don't add meaning, and as I took it, they don't add meaning to the situation. When there's a ground ball coming to you at second base, that means there's a ground ball coming to you at second base. Where other players with lesser mental games or they might be struggling at the moment is like, there's a ground ball coming, and if I don't make this play, I might get benched and the coach at least will be mad. And if I don't, this guy will be on first and he might get to second, and that'll add pitches to our pitch count, and we're trying to hang on and we got to win this game in order to do this. And the girl's in the stand. And what would she think if I missed it?
Yeah.
That's, see how I'm adding meaning.
Yeah. And
the other
guy's
like, here comes a ground ball.
Yeah. I can certainly relate to that when I played, because I didn't, you know, I was a utility guy. So my talents were so. And when I got in there, my thought process was different. It should have been probably, hey, I can get this ball, instead of, boy, I better not make a mistake because I may not be able to play anymore.
Right. And so that's back to this idea of pragmatism, which is, okay, well, what works? What helps you the most? And the challenge becomes, how good can you get at directing your energy toward things that help you the most? And it's very hard. Baseball itself is just baseball. It's tempting to say baseball is a game of failure, or baseball is torture, because you're just going to fail, and then you go home and you sit there and you wait the whole next day. If you're lucky, you play again the next day and get some new experience. Otherwise, it's a few days and you just lament over your four at bats. But you got to take responsibility. That's the foundation of the mental game, as they'll read about in Heads Up Baseball 2, which you can find at headsupbaseball2.com, is the foundation of it is taking responsibility, which I mean choosing to focus your energy on what you want, choosing to focus on something that is helpful, when usually you strike out and then you go sit on the bench and what are you focused on? You strike out, your strikeout, and how horrible that is, and how mad you are, and how what a loser you are, and whatever a person goes with it. I've done it many times myself. I'm sure I'll do it with something later today. And yet that's not helpful. If I'm going to, okay, what did I do there? Where did I, what could I have done better? Now that's one thing, but just beating yourself up is another. One is helpful, one is not helpful. And so taking responsibility, which is the first skill of playing heads-up baseball, is choosing to focus on things that are helpful instead of not helpful. And the second thing follows closely is awareness, knowing yourself to know, well, what's helpful? What is helpful for me? And what isn't? Because if we go back to Pete Rose, he would go up to the plate and be talking to the catcher and the umpire. And Derek Jeter, I've seen him be on deck, even if certainly in the hole, talking to people in the crowd. Whereas for other players, that would be the worst thing that they could do. And certainly for most coaches, that they would think, hey, get your head in the game. When that would, or don't talk to the catcher, that's the enemy. You do that. You do that for some players, that will help them. And for other players, that will mess them up royally. So awareness and knowing yourself is key. So I got to take responsibility and choose helpful thoughts. Well, how do I know which ones are helpful? Well, you want to build awareness and learn and know yourself. Like I mentioned about my son, I want him to know himself well enough to know and experiment to say, you know what, this works best for me.
So coaches need to observe a lot prior to actually implementing things.
Absolutely. And that's, if I may, I'll dovetail into my assessment, which is, I'm excited about a lot of things in the mental game of baseball and just baseball, of course, period. But I use the term mental game just because everyone else does. And it's really just a means of distinguishing a part of the game. It's sort of like that yin yang symbol where you've got the black and the white and the two little circles. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's sort of like we're picking out the white. I'm talking about the white part. And you can't just break it off like that, but nonetheless, that's what I'm doing here. Just it's a linguistic device. Anyway.
Now, let me ask you this, because we talked about the books, for coaches and players. Obviously, coaches, they need to read the books. Those are extremely important. But how young can players start implementing techniques to make them better when it comes to the mental game?
Well, I think we should start working on kids' mental game in utero. read to them, be loving, don't smoke, minimize your stress. So to give them the best chance you can at having them come out calm and happy. And then with the parenting, take good care of them, help them feel safe. Because safety ends up being the root of it all. When you feel safe, then you have full access to your talent. When you feel threatened, then it can go two ways, but usually it goes to poor performance because you tighten up into a fight, flight, or freeze response. It's like, I feel threatened. If I don't catch this ground ball, something bad could happen. Then you tighten up and you tend to not play as well. So it's really about, the biggest thing is actually the environment that we create for the kids. Will they feel safe? Can they have fun in this environment? Do we make it easy? Then we can't control whether or not they have fun, but can we make it as easy as possible for them to have fun and feel safe? Like it's okay for them to throw the ball away. Because if their goal is to not make a mistake, then they're going to significantly underperform. I think the normal question would be, well, as soon as a kid starts to play, I would say, hey, imagine yourself driving the ball up the middle, and can you see the ball go right past my head here as I throw you BP? Before I throw this pitch, see if you can see it whistle right past my head into center. Can you see that? You can see that, right? Yeah. Okay, here. And here's the pitch. And you just work it right in. It isn't like, okay, you have to lay down for 15 minutes and go through progressive relaxation. You just work the language right in, because as we hopefully established at the outset, this is a human being we're talking to. It's not a machine that has hardware and software that are separate. I wouldn't teach them to visualize until they're 12. It's like, dude, they're visualizing from the get-go.
You visualize every night.
Imagining things. Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. And all most of sports psychology, like what I've looked to do, is capture what really good people do and then help other people learn it. And I did it as a kid. I remember being in bed and visualizing running down a football field and then kind of coming present and realizing my head was lifted off the pillow. I was so there on the football field that my head, like I was juking, deking people. And I say, okay, dude, chill out here and try and go to bed. So it wasn't that someone taught me. And when I interviewed Hank Aaron, I said, hey, how'd you do that? You're the all-time total bases leader and you're 12 miles of base running. No, eight. It's actually, I redid the math, 8 miles ahead of Stan Musial. So Stan Musial would have to come back to life and hit and run 8 miles around the bases to catch the first place guy. So I talked to the first place guy, right? The rocket scientist. How'd you do that? Well, I would visualize. I would imagine. It's all preparation, he said. It's all I would imagine what I want to have happen. How's the guy going to pitch me? And I see those. Oh, that's what I did through the day on deck, in the hole, on deck, at the plate. And so I was. That's what helped me then really focus on the ball. And so it's like they do it naturally. They do some stuff naturally that there wouldn't be like a time that you would start. You just work it right into your language.
Gotcha. All right, before we take a break here, a short one, let's imagine this, okay? You're the baseball coach, whether you've got 12-year-olds or whether you've got professionals, and the game's going on, there's a lot of errors. You know, as you know, especially at the young levels, there could be a lot of errors, which is natural, as you said. I mean, it's part of the game. How does a coach deal with that? You know, a lot of guys get stressed out. They might be saying the wrong things. Give us an idea how somebody should, you know, a young coach should deal with that when young kids making mistakes.
He should deal with it weeks before the season starts by sitting down and saying, what's my coaching philosophy? What's important to me? What experience do I want my kids to have as a result of being on this team? And how can I be at my personal best? What kind of coach, what qualities do I want to have? And commit to that, visualize that, imagine that, and then before going out to practice or before going out to the field, take a few moments yourself and, like Hank Aaron, visualize yourself being who you want to be and staying centered. In heads up baseball, we refer to it as having a green light where you feel it good. And so then when that ball gets away, you have a choice. You're able to be at choice, and that it might be time to yell at the kid. I'm not saying never yell at a kid. I'm saying I want to be in a position to make the best possible interaction with that player right now. I know that guy. I know me. I know my tendencies, which after the break we'll talk about this. I want to get back to this assessment. And I know that player. I know me. I know the situation. And therefore, I will say X. And I cannot sit here on the radio and say what X is. Maybe you should chew him out, and maybe you should laugh, and maybe, I don't know what, infinite possibilities, but it's got to go because there's so many variables involved. But the biggest one of all, just if someone look for a simpler answer, is for the coach to be in control of himself so that, because if I'm overamped, like I was in a game last spring, and I was mad at the other coach in my son's team, and there was a kid out there, he was balking because he started with his hand, the ball in the glove from the stretch, and then he took the ball out, and then he put the ball back in. And every time he came set, really, it was a balk. And I would yell, balk. And the ump didn't call, and I go, ump, that's a balk. And he'd do it again, balk. And because I had lost, I had come off my moorings. And who gets hurt? The kid. I rattle him. Yeah. And it wasn't because I was being an idiot. And so that was totally inappropriate. And I teach this, right? But I had come unglued. And so I did stupid things. It's like parents, same answer for parents. You yell at your kid, you know, think, premeditate. How do I want to be? Your son swings it over his head. Should you yell at him, Johnny, that was way over your head? And now how does Johnny feel? He already feels bad enough. Don't you think he knew? So it's really, coach, be centered yourself. I can't tell you what to say, but I believe that if your heart's in the right place and you come from a premeditated place, you will make a really good decision.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's great stuff. Obviously, coaches, you're listening, players, parents around the world. One thing I believe strongly you need to do is you need to go purchase Dr. Hansen's books. Dr. Hansen, how do they get those your books?
Well, there's playbigbaseball.com. Playbigbaseball.com would be the place to go. They are on Amazon, but you won't get Heads Up Baseball 2. I mean, it depends on when you're listening to this. The book isn't out yet, Heads Up Baseball 2. .com, but it will be very soon. So you want to go there and either get on the list to be notified about it, or get it. Depends on when you happen to listen to this recording. But then my main site is playbigbaseball.com.
Okay, and we are going to put all that on our website, so we'll get all the information out to all our listeners. At this time, all our listeners, you know, do us a favor. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, first go to our website. Click on Amazon banner. It doesn't cost you anything. Gives us some credit. Helps us keep the show going. Go to Amazon.com. There you can get Dr. Hansen's books. Also, you can get my drills book, which is 100 baseball drills, especially for younger coaches. If you're interested in purchasing my baseball DVDs, there's 5 sets. You can email me at peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. Also, you can email me if you have any questions about anything we're talking about. If you would like to recommend a guest or anybody to speak on the show, just let me know. And don't forget, go to iTunes and Stitcher or any major podcast outlet and click subscribe. Especially after you listen to the show, give us a rating on the show. You know, if you really like it, obviously give us a 5-star rating and review. The ratings help us a lot. And we want to know what we can do better. So anytime you want to email, also let us know. Okay. And we really appreciate everybody around the world listening. This is, for us, it's a very important show because we feel we're educating coaches, players, and parents in some very, very critical areas on how to develop youngsters in the game.
This has been The Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock. Online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.